Sunday afternoon edition of the Anaheim Calling podcast, joined today by special appearance, although it's not like we haven't had him on before, CJ Woodling, associate editor at Anaheim Calling, and also what is it? Do you call yourself Twitter account ruiner, something like that?
yes, that is exactly it.
And then if you have any issues with the Anaheim Calling Twitter account, direct your hatred accordingly.
Please don't tweet at me or Felix. It's not us. It's definitely only CJ.
Yeah, I get enough of it on my own, so and then of course Jake Rudolph, thanks for joining us. It's fun. We're gonna have a little bit of a fiesta pod today with three people at the helm here. Hope everyone has been having a good Sunday. For everyone joining us in the Mixlr live feed, hope you didn't have too many mimosas this morning. But if you did, hopefully we can steer you into a restful Sunday afternoon here. So the Ducks taking on the Blackhawks at Honda Center this afternoon, a 1 p.m. start time, which is pretty nice for us podcast folk because we can do a pod right after the game and still have time left to do laundry. So that's pretty nice.
Play Monster.
Well, that's just you, Jake.
Oh. But hey, I'm being a good son and going to dinner with my parents. So you know what?
Oh, wow.
I'm going to take the moral high ground here.
Yeah, see, and that's the thing. With the earlier start, some of us can even hang out with our families. So there you go.
Exactly.
The Ducks taking this one 6-3 over the Blackhawks. A Blackhawks team that is eliminated from the playoffs, really has nothing to gain from playing any more hockey this season or winning any more hockey games. With this win, the Ducks are now third in the Pacific Division with 78 points, 1 point behind the San Jose Sharks, who are playing today against the Blue Jackets. So we'll see if the Blue Jackets can help out the Ducks here. Ducks now a point ahead of the Kings for the final wildcard spot. And so the Ducks solidifying their playoff positioning. Let's get right into it. The Ducks would take the first goal in this one. Ricard Raquel with a pretty feed from Ryan Getzlaff. Ricard Raquel now with his 27th goal of the season. Getzlaff picks up his 34th assist of the year. A really nice feed from Getzlaff behind the net to just kind of thread the needle. Raquel gets it in front. And also, what was interesting, we talked about this on the last show Friday night, that we had seen Brandon Montour in that first power play unit, and we assumed that that could have been because Getzlaff was out. Get another righty on that top unit, but Montour maintained his positioning today on the first unit, and it would appear that he's also back in his little office area, the left side off wing shooter's hole. So that's pretty interesting, guys. Start with you, Jake. What do you make of all that?
I mean, it's definitely good to see. Having Getzlaff is the biggest difference, though, for this power play. I mean, you look at what they did against the Blue Jackets without Getzlaff, and it was somewhat pathetic. And the power play goes as Getzlaff.
You're just a hater, Jake. You're a hater.
I guess I'm just a hater.
If you criticize the team, you're a hater. Remember that.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess
you are contributing to our overall negative reputation, and as the Twitter account ruiner, I will not stand for it.
The snark levels are insane today. You were saying.
Well, really quick question, because I wasn't fully able to catch the entire power play on that. But was Fowler out there also with all of them?
Correct.
What was the five-man unit specifically?
It was Fowler, Montour, Raquel, Getzlaff, and it's probably Henrique, I think.
It would have either been Henrique or Perry. And so that's interesting because that was the biggest change when they went back to having two defensemen on the top unit, is that Raquel was actually taken off that unit and put on the second unit. And so keeping him on that first unit with Getzlaff coming back really pays dividends right away. And it's just a great feed to Raquel, and Raquel does a great job of finishing it. And we brought this up last pod, but Raquel's feeling it right now. And kind of when a guy's in a goal scoring streak, you just kind of want to keep feeding the puck, and the puck's going to keep going in. So nothing but good things can happen with the puck on Raquel's stick right now.
Yeah. Just to build on that point quickly here. The five-man unit was indeed Fowler, Montour, Henrique, Raquel, and Getzlaff. And CJ had tweeted this out, I think, after the game or in the third period, that Getzlaff now has 10 points in his last five games. Getzlaff on the year now, 42 points in 40 games, 9 goals, 33 assists, over a point per game pace. CJ, what more is there to say besides Getzlaff is just really freaking good?
I mean, that's really it. Felix, I'm going to need you to stop stealing my thunder here, my eloquent thunder. No, I mean, it's just such a joy to watch him play hockey. And I always get kind of thrown back to, you know, a couple of years ago when there were a bunch of people in the fan base calling for Getzlaf to get stripped of that captaincy. And yeah, he hasn't been as consistent at a elite level as, you know, we know he's capable of in previous years. But I think it's safe to say over the past couple of years that he's kind of finally found that consistency that we know he's absolutely capable of. So it's just a great thing to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I was around for all those murmurs. I mean, it's
I don't
probably,
think so.
It's probably
it was an interesting time in the Ducks fan base.
I don't know if it was playoff related, but if you look now at Getzlaf's last few seasons, remarkably has had a stretch of three consecutive seasons where he played 77 games a season. I don't know how many times that's happened in NHL history, but right now he's on. If this were if he had played 82 games, he's basically on an 86 point pace. 15 goals last year, and already has 9 goals in 40 games. So. Look, he had 73 points last year in 74 games, 63 the year before that, 70 the year before that. I mean, it's pretty remarkable how good this guy is and how consistent he is, and I don't think there's any question that he's the undisputed leader of this team. Let's get to the second goal of the night. The Ducks would make it 2-0, and I'm going to set you up here, Jake. Corey Perry, with just a beautiful spin move, you know, attacks from the right side, spins into the middle of the ice, into the slot, pretty much uncontested from the Chicago side of things, and is able to just roof it, gets back onto his forehand side and just roofs it on poor Anton Forsberg, who would not see the end of this game. What might one say after seeing that play, Jake?
I mean, you might want to just say that hashtag Perry is still good. I mean, if you ask me, that's what I would say.
Amen to that.
Well, I am asking you, so it works out perfectly.
It does. It was so vintage Perry, though. It was so much fun to see. You see him drive the net. You see Osterley kind of back off a bit, trying to defend the pass against Raquel, which, granted, isn't an awful play with how hot Raquel has been. And Perry just takes full advantage and pulls a move that I don't know if I've ever seen him pull before, with a little spinorama, pulling it to his forehand, like you said, and finishing. And it was a great move. I think earlier in the season, I told CJ to describe a breakaway slap shot as gangsta. Well, this was even more gangsta than that.
There we go. I like that. I think that with that move in particular, I feel like Perry started spinning and then recognized he had even more space than he might have initially thought and just kept going. Just a really nice play. And Getzlaf with another assist on this goal. His 35th of the year, nice zone entry by Getzlaf. Getzlaf, who would, by the way, have 3 assists on the night, which is just kind of ridiculous. But anyway, let's get to the second period here. Marcus Pettersson would score his first NHL goal off of a rebound from a Kevin Bieksa slap shot on the right side of the ice in the Hawks zone. Rebound comes all the way back out to the opposite point to Marcus Pettersson, who then just kind of floats a wrist shot on net, and it makes its way through a crowd at first. It appeared as though it may have hit Derek Grant, but that would prove to not be the case upon further review. The goal gets credited to Marcus Pettersson, who gets his first NHL goal. CJ, you know, you can speak to the goal a little bit, but what has been your impression of Pettersson and kind of his first NHL go around here?
I think I'd probably describe myself as being satisfied with his performance. You know, if you look at some of his numbers, he's definitely not been a world beater by any means. You know, he's still kind of on the wrong side, I think, overall in his time here on shot attempts. That being said, though, the good moments that he has had have been really good. He came in with a reputation of having a really good, clean first pass out of the zone and breaking the puck out. And I think he's definitely lived up to that expectation. He's made a few, you know, rookie mistakes, allowing some players to go the other way. And I do kind of wish he would bulk up a little bit. And he's still young. He's still got time for that. But I think what I'm seeing out of him right now is definitely a good amount of promise for a good stay-at-home defenseman who can break the puck out pretty effectively, which is something that the Ducks definitely are going to need in the next couple of years here.
Yeah, and I mean, we've talked about it kind of ad nauseum on this pod, but, you know, at the very least, he's not one of Francois Bushman or Kevin Bieksa, and that's a pretty substantial upgrade.
It's a low bar to clear, but he clears it.
Yeah, he clears it, and like honestly, like that makes a difference. The Ducks would make it 4-0, just kind of an insane stretch there. I think it was, only 4 minutes later, Jakob Silverberg gets a pretty feed from Andrew Cogliano behind the Chicago net. Derek Grant doesn't get, he gets an assist on the play, but the real assist was the fact that he lifted a Chicago player's stick as the puck was headed towards Silverberg, allowing Silverberg to get the puck cleanly. Silverberg gets it in front, is able to fire it home, and that will be his 14th goal of the season. Silverberg's been kind of criticized this season as being inconsistent or ineffective or whatever the case may be, but I don't know. Jake, what do you kind of make of his season so far? I know I feel like you kind of see both sides on this one.
Yeah, I think he's been fine. I think he's exactly what you want out of a guy making as much as he's making. I think he's kind of he's been a bit on the unlucky side. I think he's still been shooting a fair amount, and it's just his shooting percentage has dropped a bit. I'm trying to look this up real quick. But I think the issue you're going to have with Silverberg is how much he's probably going to make on his next contract. I think for right now, he gives you exactly what you need on the team. If we're looking at shooting percentage for him this season, he's shooting 8%. And for instance, last year he shot 10%, season before that 9%. His shot totals are right where they should be. So even though he only has about 13 goals in the year, some of that could be due to bad luck. And we might be seeing a bit of a bump. We saw him score 2 goals today, which is helpful. And we also have to take into consideration that these goal totals, he had Chris Wagner as his center for a fair amount of the season before Ryan Kessler came back. And even with Kessler back, he hasn't been 100%. But I do have to say, I may have to take a little bit of credit for Silverberg's bump, because CJ, as you're going to see when you have to edit my article, I may have been calling Silverberg out a bit in this week's weekly ranking.
He for sure read it.
Yeah, oh, he definitely did. He somehow has access to unpublished articles and goes in here. Fantastic.
Oh, man, that's great.
So I'm CJ,
what's your take on Silverberg this season? Oh, sorry. Is Jake still gloating about something?
Apparently. No, I don't know. Let's just move on without him. I think I have to say, if I remember correctly, before Kessler got back, Silverberg was either leading or among the leaders of the Ducks in shot attempts. So he was really one of the better players in the absence of a lot of the regulars there. And ever since Kessler came back, and not just him, Cogliano as well, and of course Kessler himself, have kind of struggled a little bit. But, that entire line in general, especially Cogliano, has really been buzzing the last couple of games here. I don't know what it is. Maybe Kessler's finally feeling better. Maybe they're working harder. Maybe there was a change in, coaching tactics with them. Not 100% positive, but it's great to see them really starting to contribute, because the Ducks are really, really going to need them to chip in a lot more if they really want to hope at making a deep playoff run. So I was really glad to see Silverberg chip in those couple of goals. I definitely think that's going to be a good boom for him. And as Benny Anaheim Calling staff writer mentioned earlier in the Slack chat, he was calling tonight the Silvering. So that is what is officially called.
The Silvering. I like it.
The Silvering is happening.
To that point, Silverberg tonight, as a whole, above 60% in shot attempts while on the ice, but 58% with Cogliano, 53% with Kessler. That's not really something we've seen a whole lot out of this line this season, so it's good to see them kind of, obviously not against, an elite team or anything, but still a team that can give you some trouble, especially considering who they're matched up against for the most part. The Blackhawks, though, look dead to rights at 4-0 and somehow managed to mount and come back. The Ducks took their feet off the gas pedal, decided they weren't going to put their foot on the brake either if there was oncoming traffic. And so the Blackhawks would make it 4-1. Tomas Yurko with a one-timer on a delayed penalty where the Hawks would have an extra man on the ice. The Ducks drawing, or, you know, we're going to get a penalty basically for getting pinned in their zone for a while, and just those tired legs. That always seems to happen when you get stuck out there. Derek Grant just kind of watching as Yurko gets the pass on the left side of the ice and just hammers it home with pretty nice one-timer. And, you know, at that point, late in the second period, the Ducks looked kind of like, okay, we're up 4-0. Now we can just chill, essentially, until this one runs out. But, you know, the Hawks have not had a great season, but they're still a team with the type of talent that if you fall asleep a little bit, they can come back and bite you in the butt. And you look at it, you know, I thought the fourth line tonight in particular, man, there were just so many bad instances, but notably at the end of the second period, just get completely caught flat-footed in the neutral zone. Hawks easily make their way through, end up getting a beautiful chance in front of the net somehow. And if you look at the numbers, the fourth line tonight, I mean, it's not really pretty. Jason Chimera, a 23% Corsi. Derek Grant, 29%. Chris Kelly, 21%. Jake, now that we have a bit of a sample here, what are your impressions of the fourth line? I mean, granted, it's two games, but we got a little more information now than we did a couple days ago.
Yeah, it's two games. I mean, it's basically kind of exactly what I was afraid of and what I was kind of expecting, I guess. They currently, in the game on Friday, they were on the ice for 1-4 and 1-against. The 4 was the Josh Manson breakaway goal. And so, yes, they did play a part in that, but I don't really give them full credit because it wasn't the full line out there. Yeah, and the 4 was based on Chimera kind of losing his man and him jumping down. And then tonight, I'm trying to get a look on it. And at 5-on-5, they weren't on the ice for a 4 but because technically this was at 6-on-5. But this 4 did happen because of their penalty. They were out there and because of the penalty was taken. They were on the ice actually, though, for a 4, so it kind of evens itself out a bit. But being that bad in terms of Corsi 4 percentage and scoring chances for and all those different kind of stats really doesn't bode well for the future of this line. I mean, they played, let me see, in all situations, they would have played 11 minutes, 10 minutes. The only positive that I can really take out of them playing is it gives the top line a bit more rest by forcing, by giving the fourth line a bit more minutes. But I don't know.
It's really not that much of a difference. Yeah.
I think it's a bit nerve-wracking, but I don't know. It's pretty much what I expected.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you look at overall the minutes tonight, and it seems like Randy Carlyle didn't like what he was seeing from those fourth and third lines. I mean, Andre Kasha didn't even play 12 minutes tonight. Nick Ritchie just cracking 12 minutes. Kelly and Chimera hardly playing either. So I don't know if there was a little benching action there, but I really think just, you know, throw out all the stats, that line of Kelly, Chimera, and Grant just looked pretty bad for most of the night. So anyway, we'll see. They're a fourth line, so at the end of the day, you can't make too much of it. But look, the whole idea of bringing these guys in was, you know, speed, veteran leadership, and hasn't totally manifested itself on the ice to date. But look, it's only two games. We can't make too much out of it. To the third period we go. Yeah. And the Ducks would end up making it. Let's see here. Why are my notes crapping out on me? The Ducks would control it in the offensive zone. Oh, sorry. The Blackhawks would actually make it 4-2. Ducks control in the offensive zone. Hawks win a battle at the point, which allows them to break it out. Nick Schmaltz is able to beat Hampus Lindholm to the puck in the neutral zone, beats Josh Manson to the Anaheim net, and just slips it 5-hole on John Gibson on a goal that, you know, I don't know if Gibson would want it back, but I thought Gibson looked pretty great as a whole tonight. CJ, what did you see on that play?
Yeah, it just feels like maybe he wasn't as set as he should have been. You know, the Chicago ended up getting the better of the Ducks for the most part in terms of scoring chances and shots and things like that. And as you said earlier, they're a team that can make you pay if you sit back a little bit, which is exactly what we saw here. And they do have some good speed. So I did see Chicago utilizing their speed a little bit to get some of those chances. And I think most of the time, you know, Gibson's going to stop that. But for just whatever reason, he may not have been ready, wasn't quite set as he should have been. And, you know, those goals are going to happen every once in a while.
Yeah, and at that point, you feel the momentum of the Blackhawks. You feel that, okay, it's a two-goal game early in the third period. Uh-oh, are we going to see another comeback against the Ducks? Not to be, just a short little while later, Jakob Silverberg would make it 5-2 Anaheim on a really nice play from that line. Ryan Kessler throws it in front, kind of from the wing slash point, and just throws it to Andrew Cogliano in front, who tips it on net, isn't able to score initially, but the rebound comes back out to Jakob Silverberg, who bangs it home. And at that point, all of a sudden, it's a 5-2 game. You kind of nullify that momentum that Chicago has been building up. Joel Quenneville would actually challenge this play for goalie interference and didn't really have much of a case, but I guess why not? I mean, you never know with goalie interference this year. And yeah, I mean, look, I don't mind it, just because if you're a coach in that situation and you have an outside chance of coming back, why not just, you know, why not just roll the dice and see if the refs mess it up? It's not like they haven't done that enough this year with goalie interference. Call on the ice would stand. Ducks up 5-2. At that point, Ducks starting to pick it back up in the third period. A really nice against the grain pass from Andre Kasha behind the net. Kind of a pass that we've seen the likes of Evgeny Kuznetsov make quite frequently, where he's going to one side and throws it back to where he just was. Adam Henrique has a gaping net to shoot at, and it just gets blocked on the way there. Ducks would end up making it 6-2 on another goal from Corey Perry. This one, though, I mean, easily the most, probably one of the nicest goals of the season from Anaheim, I would say. Ryan Getzlaf just gets the puck into the Chicago Blackhawks zone, is able to control it down low. Seemingly no one on the Blackhawks in this instance can take the puck from him. Brings it back out to the point. Cam Fowler immediately dishes it back to Getzlaf, kind of recognizing that there's a ton of space. He initiates the give and go, gets it back in the slot from Getzlaf on kind of a nice threading the needle pass. Fowler then dishes it to Corey Perry, who's open on the, you know, on the left side of the goal. Perry initially gets stopped on a really nice save from JF Berube, but then rebound comes right back to Corey Perry, who then roofs it into the net. And I mean, just what a play, and just really nice synergy there between Fowler and Getzlaf. Jake, what'd you see there?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it was definitely one of the prettier goals they've scored all season. And just, I mean, you see Fowler streaking down through the slot and really makes a great play, and you expect him to fully shoot it and just finds Perry. And even though Perry doesn't score it right away, he's able to kind of take the second chop at it to put it in. It was just great persistence, great skill. Kind of great play all around, and you can kind of see the skill that this team has, and it really kind of, I don't know if that's the sign of this, but you're really starting to see the team kind of click and kind of come together at the right time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's like Benny says in our chat, you know, it's the kind of play where it's, I'm Ryan Getzlaf and you're not. And most of the time that seems to work for Anaheim. Late in the game, kind of in garbage time, the Blackhawks were able to make it 6-3, but just too little too late. Chicago actually pulls its goalie with just over 2 minutes left. Perry actually misses two chances at the empty net, and I'm sure he loved that. I'm sure he would have loved to get his hat trick in order. Not to be. Ducks take it 6-3, final score. Overall, you know, kind of a weird one because Anaheim came out so hot, some pretty poor goaltending on the Chicago end of things, but also just some really poor defense as well. Final scoring chances actually 38-30 in favor of Chicago, but, you know, like we said, there's a lot of noise there in terms of Chicago pressing to make the comeback. All right, so that'll do it for today's recap. Let's get into some questions because I know – actually, no, we have a bit of news to talk about. So announced yesterday evening – Ducks prospect Maxime Comtois, left winger for the Victoriaville Tigers, signs his entry-level deal. And Comtois, who had a really good World Junior, has kind of been red hot since, has 76 points in 50 games in the QMJHL, 41 goals, 35 assists, a 50th overall pick in last year's draft. You know, I think it's kind of looking like a steal, right, CJ?
Yeah, at least that's the way it's shaping up to be. You know, he's still probably at least a full season or two away, really, from making this Ducks squad, I think. But he's certainly kind of proving what a lot of scouts were hyped about him a couple of years ago. He had a phenomenal draft minus 1 year. So the year before his draft season, he had a phenomenal year to the point where a lot of scouts and a lot of prospect analysts were saying that Comtois was definitely going to be a top 15 pick. I think there were even a few scouts who had him as a top 5 pick once his draft season came around. However, he had a tough time finding the back of the net, really kind of struggled down the stretch, and that turned a lot of people off on him. Obviously, Anaheim was able to snap him up when he was still expected to go in the first round, snapped him up in the second, and I think Comtois really put in the work to get back there and to prove that, hey, you know what, I'm working my way towards an NHL spot eventually. So it's really good to see him kind of turn it around here and make Bob Murray not regret picking him.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Jake, what do you think of Comtois?
Yeah, he definitely kind of seems like he could be the steal of the draft. It's hard for me to really kind of know a whole lot about him just because I haven't watched a whole lot of him. But he definitely seems like he could be that bit of underrated guy with a more high profile prospects being the Steele, the Terry, the Jones, and Comtois could be this guy that comes in and really fills a hole in the team, kind of more playing that two way role, being able to score, but also kind of being very defensively responsible. I think from what I saw him out of World Juniors, it was really, really impressive. Kind of his ability to play both ends of the ice. And that was one of the things a lot of kind of people that paid attention to that tournament in depth and really were following Team Canada were really harping about, or kind of raving about, actually. And the coach was really big on that. And he was also an underager in that tournament. So to have that kind of impact as one of the younger guys on the team is really impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess you guys are both really high on him. I guess it's going to be my role, as always, to throw a little cold water on this one. I don't know how to totally feel about it, because I feel like a lot of this, I don't know if they would have signed him anyway at this time, but he's been extremely hot lately. You got to give some credit where credit's due, obviously, in terms of primary points per 60 minutes at 5-on-5 in the QMJHL this season. Comtois is sixth in the entire league amongst forwards with 2.81 points per 60 minutes. That's pretty good. But then you look at it a little further, and you know, he's got 27 goals in 50 games, only 10 assists. And among those top six guys, he's one of the two with a 20-plus shooting percentage. He's sitting on a 23.89 shooting percentage. Now, I don't know what to totally make of that in juniors. I mean, all these guys have pretty high rates. I guess one thing you can say is that he's one of the younger guys in this top six, so that certainly bodes well. My only concern is that if you look at shots for per 60 at even strength, he's not really up there at all. So we'll see, but it seems like there's at least a future for this guy in the pro ranks. All right. Jake, you got any listener questions for us to hit on here?
So let's get it. We got one. I've actually jumped into the Ducks Discord recently, so shout out to anyone there that's listening to this. Kind of a really good place to talk the Ducks if anyone's looking for that. But I got a question from Berserker Olaf. With the talk of Eves potentially coming back this season, how do you think that affects the current lines?
Well, I'll jump in this one first. First off, I still am very skeptical that Eves comes back this season. Obviously, just for his sake, I'd love to see him back and, you know, back to full health. But I think that the health bit there is certainly kind of the most important part, and I don't think they're going to rush him. At least I would hope not. I think once he comes back, it's going to be interesting, because that left side of the ice right now for Anaheim is kind of set in stone a little bit. I mean, you have Raquel, Cogliano, Richie, and Chimera. So I don't really know what you do there. I mean, maybe Chimera comes out of the lineup, or Chris Kelly comes out of the lineup, so that you can put Eves back on the first line and then Raquel plays with Henrique and Kasha. I don't really know, but it's certainly a good problem to have for Anaheim. CJ, what do you think for what happens if Eves comes back?
Well, remember, so I'll give a little bit of a correction here. Eves played on the right side of last year. Yeah, Raquel was on. It was the Raquel Getzlaf Eves line up at the top for most of that.
Oh, really?
Yep.
I don't know why I thought he was on the right side. Okay, well, the point pretty much still stands. On the right side, Anaheim is Perry, Silverberg, and Kasha. And then you've got Chris Kelly, who is hashtag fast. So
Perry, get in the press box.
Yeah. Perry's too slow for 3-on-3, so clearly it doesn't long line up. But I wouldn't totally mind seeing Eves on the fourth line, honestly. I mean, I think that they're kind of set with their top six here, unless maybe you put Eves on the line of Richie, Henrique, and Kasha, although they've been pretty good together, so I don't know. What do you guys think of that? Eves on the fourth line. I feel like it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Just because the top nine is just kind of set in my eyes.
Yeah, if nothing else. And Datadog brings up a good point here in the Mixler chat where his conditioning, though, in the fourth line may be a good idea for him if indeed his conditioning isn't where it was last season. And I would say that if he does come back this season, I would be shocked if his conditioning was anywhere close to what it could be for potential top line minutes. So when you factor in those kinds of situations, that very well could be a good option for him, along with also the fact that I think he was so good on the power play last year too, that he could also be that power play option, one of those rare fourth liner power play options. So I definitely think there's a role for him on the team. We're really just going to have to see how his recovery goes. And again, this is all a giant if he comes back.
Yeah,
at least this season.
Yeah, and I'm like, the more I think about it, the more I think Eves in the fourth line makes a lot of sense, just because that fourth line has been so god awful this season. And, you know, I think they're kind of set with their top nine. I don't really see them changing it. And so you put Eves on that fourth line, and I feel like that gives it a huge boost. All right, Jake, next question.
All right, Adam Hutchinson, writer on the site, chimes in with a very predictable question. Thoughts on Derek Grant's two-point game, his fourth point in four games?
Adam, if you are listening to this, please load yourself into the Anaheim Calling staff cannon, and we're going to fire you into the sun.
Well, does anyone here think Derek harsh. Grant is... Does anyone here think Derek Grant is any good? Or I don't know. Like, what's the prevailing thought here?
I think he's a decent fourth liner, I guess. I don't know. Do we want to say elite fourth liner? Would that make Adam happy?
No. I think he wants it all. I think he's getting greedy.
He wants his cake and he wants to eat it too.
Yeah, I mean, with Derek Grant, look, I think it's worked out real well for him this season. You know, I think he's been able to produce. I think he's probably bought himself a few more years in the NHL. I think he's one of those guys who can make a play every so often, which is, as far as fourth lines go, that's, I guess, pretty good. But I don't know. I mean, I watch him play without the puck, and it's not great. All right. Can we talk about anything else besides Derek Grant here?
All right. Paul Ip. Sorry, Paul. Who do we want and don't want to face in the playoffs, West and East? So I think maybe we can transition and just kind of talk about kind of the most like, I think we did this a bit last pod, but the most likely teams the Ducks are going to play and kind of who we think they're kind of better set up to play. What do we think the better matchups are, that type of thing.
CJ, you take this one first. Who do you want to see in the West? See and don't. Who do you want them to see as a good matchup? And also, what's the matchup you'd like to avoid? And maybe a name or two from the East as well.
Jake and I talked about this, I think, a day or two ago, where at least in the Pacific. First off, I think most of us agree that the Ducks' easiest path through the playoffs is by getting a divisional spot. and not a wild card spot. Specifically, because if you get a wild card spot at this point, especially if it's that second wild card spot, you're likely going to have to go through Nashville, which immediately transitions you over to the Central, which means you're probably going to have to go through either Nashville, and then if you do somehow get by them, there's a good chance you're going to have to go through the Jets, who I would argue is not a huge step up from Nashville. So I think the way the Ducks want to go is through the Pacific. I think that the Kings would probably be the best matchup first round. And not only that, it would just be a hell of a series and so much fun to watch no matter what, even if you're not a fan of these teams. And then if you are, it's a great way to, you know, take about 20 years off your life. But they're great games. But I believe that just based on talent level and on paper, the Kings are probably the matchup that I think the Ducks would want to see the most. After that, I would probably put San Jose after them, Vegas behind that, and then Nashville kind of being the team that I think the Ducks really want to avoid as long as they can. I know there's a lot of Ducks fans out there who want the narrative of getting revenge on Nashville for, you know, three consecutive playoffs and things like that. But at a certain point, you kind of have to look at what the greatest chances of success are. And to me, that's not Nashville right now. So
yeah.
As far as the East goes, you know, as far as the East goes, Tampa Bay is just a complete juggernaut right now. I feel like Boston as well is right up there. I don't think they're too far behind Tampa. They are just playing out of their minds right now. And of course, anytime you have to face the Bergeron line, you're probably going to be in for a bad time. So those two out of there, it's very tough to see people really beating them, at least early on.
Yeah, Jake, what do you think?
I think CJ kind of hits the nail on the head with wanting to go through the Pacific. I definitely think LA would be the easiest, quote unquote, first round matchup the Ducks could really get. I think the Ducks have matched up well against them this season. I think the Ducks have won the majority of the games. I think the only game they've actually lost to the Kings were both in overtime, and that was both when the team was basically the San Diego Goals. Since the team's been healthy, they actually, I don't think, have lost to the Kings. So I think that's a good sign. I think that playoff or regular season series is a good predictor of playoff series success. And so the fact that the Ducks have had success against the Kings, that's a good thing. The Sharks, I think, would be a tough matchup due to the fact that the Ducks have, like I said, with the regular season series, the Ducks haven't had a whole lot of success against the Sharks so far this season. Vegas, I think, I've said it a bunch here. I don't buy Vegas. I think that the Kings are the better matchup than the Golden Knights, but I think that the Golden Knights aren't going to be that tough of a first round opponent.
I'm with you there, Jake.
I don't think that if you give a coach and a team enough time to really key in on what Vegas does, they're not going to kind of surprise you anymore. They don't have the top end talent. I just don't buy him. So I think that it probably goes the Kings, then Vegas, then San Jose to me.
Oof. All right. Well, there's a lot to filter out there. I don't know. No top end talent. I'm a little puzzled by that one, but, look, I think that
I agree with him.
Yeah, I'll give you that. But forwards, I think they're looking pretty great. I think that for the Ducks in the playoffs, there's only extremes. There's a really big middle. So I think, like, for example, LA is probably the best matchup, but it's also not like the most probable. And then in terms of a favorable matchup, and then for Nashville, Winnipeg, you know, that's the one you'd probably want to avoid the most. Outside of that, you know, it's kind of like what you guys have been saying here. I think against the Sharks, the Golden Knights, maybe less so against the Kings, but it's all kind of, I feel like those are all really close series. I think the Ducks aren't necessarily the favorite, or if they are, not heavy favorites in any of those series, except for maybe the Kings, because I think the Sharks got a lot better at the trade deadline. And I just don't it's not that I necessarily think Vegas is some, you know, unbeatable team, but every time I've seen the Ducks play them, even except maybe the last game, it just seems like they don't match up well stylistically. The Golden Knights play with a ton of speed. The Ducks don't. And, you know, we'll see how that manifests itself. But I think this is a good time to mention that there are only 16 games left in the regular season, which is pretty incredible. And, you know, with that being said, between the second spot in the Pacific Division and the spot just outside of the last wildcard position, there's a 3-point spread. So we're literally not going to know the final arrangement until the very last game of the regular season, probably. All right, Jake, we got any more questions?
We got one from the Reddit asking us to kind of jump in to give us our thoughts on the Ducks RFAs and UFAs and who we think they're going to resign. So I'll throw it back at you, Felix, and I'll kind of give you the different UFAs and RFAs the team has and just kind of being able to get an idea
here, let's
for
go,
who we think they're going to
resign. Let's go name by name. Let's go name okay. by name and start so, with the forwards. So you want to throw them at me?
Jason Chimera.
Does not come back.
Antoine Vermette.
3-year deal.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, CJ. Jake, you throw them at CJ and then we'll answer them. All right. Next.
You can. Okay. I'm just going to give you the heads up that every single answer for me is 3-year extension.
All right. Let's do this.
All right. So that one was Antoine Vermette.
He's not coming back. Nope.
Definitely not coming back. All right.
Chris Kelly.
Negative.
Nope. Nope.
JT Brown.
Nope.
I don't see it. Nope.
That one, I maybe could see him getting another contract from us. Maybe. Maybe, maybe, maybe.
See, I feel like that's next your one's heart Nick talking there, Jake.
Yeah, it is. But sometimes I let my heart take over and take over my head as much as I am analytical. Nick Ritchie.
Here we go. Yes, he will sign a team-friendly deal looking at the 4-year range is what I would say.
I don't know if I'd put 4 years. I'm thinking 2 to 3 year prove-it deal. Probably yeah. $1.5 million, something like that.
Alright.
Yeah, I think CJ kind of hits it on the head. I think it's going to be more of a bridge deal. I think that it's going to be a bridge probably maybe around $2 million for about 3 years. Andre Kasha.
Yes, he's coming back. I think he's, I don't know if he touches $2 million, but I think they're gonna lock him down for sure.
Hell to the yes. I think he goes probably a little over $2 million, but I think it'll still be a bridge contract. Yeah, I think that he's definitely earned trust from Bob Murray, but not enough to go the Raquel or Hampus route.
Let me ask you guys this kind of on Kasha. Do you think Kasha and Ritchie sign matching deals?
No. I just think Kasha has been better than Ritchie. So
yeah, I'll agree. I think Kasha makes
– Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, so do I.
Okay. Derek Grant.
Yes. Yes. Derek Grant is going to laugh all the way to the bank after this contract negotiation with the Ducks. I'm saying, I bet you 2 to 3 years, he's going to top $1 million.
I'm going to say, yeah, I'll agree with that. I'm going to say 2 years.
And Twitter is going to lose its mind, by the way, when this happens.
Oh, they will. Oh, absolutely. And I'm going to have to hear about it. Fantastic.
Yeah. All right. Who do we got next?
I don't know if that happens. And so kind of circling around really quickly. So we're saying there are currently 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There are 7 RFAs/UFAs, and we are only saying that 2 of them are going to – or I'm saying 2 of them are going to resign, and you guys are saying 3 of them are going to resign with the team. So that will leave a fair amount of open spots going into next season, which is kind of what we heard from Bob Murray. Seems like they want to be the case.
Yeah, but they love Derek Grant. He's the first center.
Elite. Hashtag elite.
Someone's going to overpay him. Someone is, and I really hope it's not us.
It'll be the Ducks. Yeah.
Yeah, and it'll probably be the Ducks. That's what I'm going to go with.
Don't put this evil on me, guys.
All right, let's why don't you throw some blue liners at us?
Okay. Kevin Bieksa, don't do it. Don't do this, Felix. Don't do this.
You know, it's so tough to say because I think there's a world that exists where he signs maybe a year deal, kind of like a la Francois Beauchemin. But I don't know, the way that they've kind of, you know, relegated him to, you know, every other game duty, I think there's a pretty real chance that he's not back in Anaheim next season.
I'm going to agree based solely off of that, basically, the fact that he's now getting cycled out for Pettersson. Also, the fact that you have to remember that the Ducks organization is in love with Jakob Larsson. Like, they are so damn high on him, and he's been playing extremely well. He's been arguably San Diego's best defenseman since he came back from injury a few weeks ago. So I just don't see Bieksa coming back at all.
But here's the other here's the only thing. I think Beauchemin probably retires after this season, or at least that's probably what he should do. But I don't know how they feel about a bottom pairing of two kind of unproven guys next season. But I mean, that's something that can easily be changed, you know, before or after training camp, as we saw with the Beauchemin signing. So anyway,
are unproven guys really any much worse than what we currently have on the blue line or Beauchemin or Bieksa, basically?
Well, the thing is, Ducks management
seems to think so.
Well, I think they're starting to kind of be down on those guys, like finally. But I guess I let the cat out of the bag there. I don't think Francois Beauchemin comes back next season.
Well, he's been very public and adamant that he's retiring. Like, he has given no indication that he's coming back.
Yeah.
Okay. Next name, and this is the first RFA with arbitration rights. So that also plays into the Nick Ritchie and Kosh one, is they don't have arbitration rights. They're basically at the mercy of the team. But Brandon Montour.
Ooh, this is a tough one. CJ, you give your thought first.
Well, I think he'll definitely be getting a raise, and he will definitely be getting a contract with the Ducks. I would be very surprised if it goes to arbitration. I don't know when the last time the Ducks went to arbitration was.
Did they do it with Hampus Lindholm, or did he
just Hampus Lindholm wasn't arbitration eligible.
Which is why he held out, probably. Okay.
Yeah. So that's the thing there. So I think that Montour gets a bridge deal as well. I'm going to go ahead and guess he's probably going to be in the $2.5 million range.
Ooh, okay. I'm actually going to go the other way with that. I think that if you look at the way they're using him, if you look at the season he's had, I can't really think of a number right now, but I think he gets more than a bridge deal. I think that, look, they're using him as a top four defenseman, and since he's been in that role with Cam Fowler, he's been great, and I don't really see any sign of that stopping. He's had kind of the box score stats. I mean, he's got 24 points this season. I could see him getting a pretty nice deal. Now, the question for him, from his side of things, is more, do you want to get locked down now, or do you want to take a bridge so you can capitalize sooner? Because I think he's probably, I mean, if this Fowler Montour pairing continues, there's a chance they only get better, and that he only gets better. And so I think the team will want to lock him down long term. I think he's probably going to want a shorter deal, and I think they might kind of settle somewhere in between there. I think a 3 to 4 year deal is not out of the question.
3 years, maybe. The reason why I bring that bridge deal up is because I think it does similar to Vatanen. Vatanen, you know, after his entry level contract, and correct me if I'm wrong, took, you know, kind of a small prove it bridge deal before he ended up signing the current contract that he's on, that eventually was traded to the Devils. And so, to me, I feel like Montour is going to, the team and Montour now. The arbitration rights may play into this a little more. I don't know if Ottenham was arbitration eligible at that point. He could get a little bit more there because of that. But I personally think he's going to get a similar bridge deal to Sammy.
Interesting. CJ, well, stop reading my mind. Just to your point, just to your point there, if you look at Sammy Vatanen, he did coming off of his entry-level deal, he signed a two-year deal with a $1.26 million cap hit per season, which definitely seems like a prove-it deal. But, you know, the season – and it's actually very interesting because the season the season he was coming off of, 2013-14, in 48 games, he had had 6 goals and 15 assists for 21 points. That's in 48 games. And if you look at Brandon Montour this season,
lockout shortened
season, stat line is shortened season, but his Brandon Montour's current stat line is eerily similar. And so maybe we see that, but I think the role that Montour is playing, it's a pretty big one, and so I could see that helping him out in the negotiations. Jake, what do you think?
I mean, arbitration, a lot of what it comes down to is them kind of laying out points and putting down arguments for why you should be making such and such and such and such, and I think a lot of it comes down to comparables. And I think kind of the Vatanen comparison is pretty apt. As you were saying that, CJ, I had already been pulling up all of Vatanen's cap-friendly and hockey reference pages to compare it to Montour and kind of feel like you beat me to the punch there.
Lockout shortened season, 13-14.
Jake, you have been demoted from the podcast. I am the new second member. Goodbye.
Damn it. Oh.
You were saying.
Yeah, you're right. Shit. Damn it. Whoops. Well, still. I think the pace and all that different type of stuff, maybe the fact that he has a bit more games played under his belt will get him a bit more money, but I could see it coming out around the probably in the 2 to 4 year range, something in there being around maybe 2 to 3 million, something in there. So maybe a little bit more than what Vatanen got on his second deal, but also adding a bit more term to it.
I just think at this point in his career, I just think Montour's he's proving to be pretty valuable to this team because they don't really have they haven't had anyone else who's worked with Fowler to this degree. I mean, Fowler and Vatanen had okay success last season, but it's worked so far. Obviously, we need a lot more, you know, data to really know for sure. But I think that's just an important spot on the team. And, you know, that's not to say that a Larson couldn't step in and maybe take it, or that Montour takes a step back next year. But I think, look, the signs are pointing to him being a pretty key piece of this roster for the next few years. And they've kind of made their decisions accordingly. You look at some of the guys they've kind of let go of, and I feel like, you know, Vatanen, Theodore, and I feel like part of that has to be some confidence in Montour. So I don't know, if I were the Ducks, I would be trying to lock him down.
I'm changing my prediction. I'm going to say he gets a 3-year deal because he's going to want it to go to his UFA years. And if they go above 3, then his price is going to go up because they're going to be buying UFA years because he is 23, going to be 24 in April. So I believe it puts him at 27 in 3 years, and 27 is when you become UFA. So I'm going to say 3 years. If they want to keep the price low, and then if they're willing to go more, the price is going to have to go up because they're buying UFA years.
Absolutely. And I think that if you're Brandon Montour, and or at least his agent, you're absolutely fighting for that 3-year deal because you want to hit UFA when, you know, you want to strike the iron while it's still hot. But at the same time, you know, if you're the Ducks, you want to buy some of those years. And so we could see a pretty interesting contract negotiation between these two sides because clearly there's some things to consider. All right, we got anything else to hit on, or should we get on out of here?
I don't really have a whole lot else, and we all have stuff to do.
All right. Did we just lose CJ, or am I dreaming here?
CJ, you
alive? CJ, are you there? Oh, we did lose CJ. I don't know what happened
there.
We
lost him.
I think this is the first time on the pod that we've lost someone.
I mean, it wouldn't be a hockey podcast without technical difficulties. I mean, Merrick versus Wyszynski set that up.
Yeah, all right. Well, I think this is the surest sign that we should get on out of here. Thanks to everyone for joining in the Mixlr chat. As always, we appreciate the live feed, the live commentary.
Data Dog comes in with, "This is why CJ isn't a regular."
Sorry, guys.
Oh, he's back. Look at that. He's back.
Oh. I did it. I heard that, by the way. I see how it is. Jake, I'm so going to screw with your weekly ranking article now.
No.
Okay. All right. We desperately need to pull the plug on this podcast right now. Okay. So thanks, Trevor, for joining in. As always, make sure to check us out on the Apple Podcast app. Search Anaheim Calling the Podcast, or just search Anaheim Ducks, and we will pop right up. Give us a follow there. Sorry, subscribe there. Leave a rating and a review if you enjoy the show. We will be back Tuesday night after the Ducks face off against the Capitals at Honda Center. After that, the Ducks take on the Predators on Thursday, and then the Ducks will – that will be it, actually, for the week ahead. Only two games for the Ducks, so that's going to be a bit of a short week. Sorry, three games, take on the Stars Friday night. And, of course, check us out on SoundCloud, soundcloud.com/ACPod. On the SoundCloud mobile app, just search Anaheim Calling the Podcast or Anaheim Ducks, and we will appear. Give us a follow there and leave a heart on the episode if you enjoyed it. AnaheimCalling.com, at Anaheim Calling on Twitter for all your Ducks content needs. CJ is on Twitter at CJ Woodling. Check him out there. Jake is on Twitter at ReindeerGames91. And I am on Twitter at Felix_Sicard. Article coming out tomorrow. Be on the lookout for that. And that will do it for us today, guys. We will catch you at the next pod Tuesday night. Talk to you then. Bye-bye.
Later. Bye.